How have you not seen this?
Welcome back to How Have You Not Seen This. As always, it's me, your host, Dustin Meadows. Today, I'm joined by John Hoffner.
Hey, man.
And Chris Paugh.
Hey, everybody.
And we tackled Francis Ford Coppola's 1979 Vietnam epic, Apocalypse Now. Great movie. My favorite Martin Sheen performance. Of course, notorious for a lot of production troubles it had. Really great. Really long movie. But very well done. So, John, how have you not seen this?
Well, I generally don't watch a lot of war movies.
Okay.
So that's probably the simple answer. I've missed out on a lot of stuff that was before my time, like a lot of people. But yeah, usually I just don't go out of my way to see military and war movies.
Okay.
But I've always known this one was regarded as a classic, so it was kind of in the back of my mind to watch.
Cool. Chris, same thing. How have you not seen this?
Pretty much the same thing.
Okay.
I feel like I had someone in my life at a young age who watched a lot of war movies, and I just hated it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a grandpa like that. That might be the same reason.
Yeah. But the war movies that I remember are like the old, like black and white, and
yeah,
like just intense, nonstop shooting the entire time.
Yeah.
So.
Like some of John Wayne shit.
Yeah.
I guess.
I don't know why I threw out an example. Oh, yeah, like some of these things that you don't really watch. That you'll totally get what I'm talking about. Yeah, sure.
Hey, Gramps, who's in this?
It's always John Wayne.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you guys. I'm not really a huge war movie person either. For the longest time, I hated them. And then, like, gradually, I'd become kind of interested. Like, the first one I remember watching was Full Metal Jacket. Which I really like because I'm a huge Kubrick fan.
Okay, when Chris first told me we were doing this, I transposed those in my mind for a minute, and I thought, oh, this is the Kubrick one.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's the Kubrick one. Yeah,
see,
Full Metal Jacket is Kubrick.
I have seen Full Metal Jacket, and I love it, but I don't know. I feel like that, I suppose it should be the same with this, where it just had such a reputation that you kind of have to watch it just living in America.
Yeah. I feel like Kubrick's is a lot more accessible for a number of reasons. Obviously, the runtime, I think, definitely. I think that's what deterred me, because I didn't see this until my senior year at Bowling Green, at college a couple years ago. And it's solely because, like, oh, this movie's 3 hours long. When am I going to have 3 hours? And then I'd sit down and watch Seven Samurai, which was even longer, because I couldn't rationalize watching, like, a three-hour war movie. But yeah, like there's not many I go out of my way to see. Platoon's another one that, like, it's one of the only ones I've really seen that I liked. And then this obviously is pretty high on the list for me.
I saw Black Hawk Down.
Yeah.
Which was just a lot of, it was mostly action. It was mostly
Very action oriented. Like, I saw it once in the theaters. I feel like Ridley Scott did that one, but I might be making that up.
No idea.
But, yeah, I remember it's weird, too, because, like, it's such a huge, like, there's all these random, like, Ewan McGregor's in it, Josh Hartnett, Tom Sizemore, I want to say, Eric Bana, like, it's very bizarre, and it's just very across the board.
See, those are all actors I probably wasn't aware of till after that.
Exactly, yeah, and I was the same way when I saw it in the theater. Like, 2 years later, I was like, oh, I like Eric Bana a lot, he's really cool. Oh, he was in this forgettable war movie in Somalia that I saw a couple of years ago?
It sounds like both Loki and the Hulk were in it.
Loki's Tom Hiddleston.
Yeah, yeah.
Tom, oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, so you're halfway.
Well, I don't know all these guys yet.
No, that's fair. So cool. All those things being said, what did you guys think of this?
I thought it was amazing.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought it was really good.
I agree, it was really long.
Yeah. But how did it make you feel?
What was the runtime of the version that we watched?
Right around 3 hours.
Really?
Yeah.
See, it didn't feel... I knew it was long going in.
Yeah.
So it was long, but it didn't feel like 3 hours.
Yeah, it's just south of 3 hours, so it's like maybe 2 hours 40, something like that.
And there's an extended version that's even longer?
Yes, the extended version, Apocalypse Now Redux, is 202 minutes. So just south of 3.5 hours, which... Yeah,
wow.
That's actually the version that I saw first, too. and then I watched the original cut, and I don't really feel like Redux offers enough to justify that extended runtime.
Yeah. It's, I mean, any movie that's 3 hours to begin with, it's hard to justify. Like,
yeah.
It would have been more perfect if we had left more in.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to sound like I didn't like it,
because
it's really good.
Yeah.
It's stupid good. But it's one of those, like, I probably won't revisit it anytime soon.
Yeah.
Because it's just, it's intense and kind of depressing in some places.
Yeah, definitely. I have not watched this since 2010. That's the last time I watched this. And that was the first time when I watched the Redux version and the original cut. It's like, this movie's really good. I know that I like it. I don't need to revisit that well anytime soon.
I think it's just the kind of movie that it is. There are those
that
are like that where you should see them, but then it's not like a fun, watchable.
Yeah, or like something like Requiem for a Dream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great movie. Can't watch that one anytime in the next 2 or 3 years because I'm still recovering from watching it like a decade ago.
We're not talking about Requiem for a Dream. I wasn't crazy about that one, though. I don't,
yeah.
I feel like it's a little overrated.
I can see that. I remember liking it a lot. But more than that, I remember just having a draining effect like on me.
You can make a crazy comparison. The Passion of the Christ.
Yeah.
That intensity. Like, I won't watch Breaking Bad for years again.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I can't
takes kind
handle,
of a psychic toll on you.
Yeah, it does. I have a little bit of an anxiety.
Yeah,
like, in my chest.
That show is notorious. Like, even episodes where it doesn't seem like anything happened, like the end of the episode, like you realize, oh, I've dug my fingers into my chair's armrest.
No, I meant right now. I need to be excused.
He gets emotional talking about the Passion of the Christ.
Take some Xanax.
Just take a couple of downers, you know, level yourself out. Let's talk about some of the things in this movie. One of my favorite things is that opening sequence with the end by the Doors playing. When Martin Sheen is in the hotel room and he's like reflecting. He's like, I'm in here getting weaker. Charlie's out there getting stronger. That is hands down one of my favorite openings in a movie ever.
Hmm.
Do you think the naked kung fu was directly lifted from that in Die
Hard? Die Harder?
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Because I feel like even though I've never seen this, I've seen it.
Yeah, yeah, the naked kung fu. And definitely in that, I mentioned while we were watching it, Major Payne actually, the opening scene very directly references Apocalypse Now. Because Damon Wayans' character, Major Payne, is doing, like, the naked kung fu in his hotel room. At one point, like, he catches a rat and then, like, cooks it over, like, a little fire he's made in his room. And, like, and he's just saying all the same shit. He's like, I'm in here getting weaker. Charlie's out there getting stronger. And it's really funny, too, because that other connection, I think I mentioned this, too. Albert Hall, who plays Chief, the PBR captain of the boat, actually plays a general in Major Payne, who gives Major Payne his walking orders when he's relieved of service. So I thought that was funny that there was like a connection to Apocalypse Now between obviously a really great movie made by Francis Ford Coppola, and then this kind of goofy comedy with Damon Wayans like 20 years
yeah.
later.
Well, I think that's similar to the drill sergeant from Full Metal Jacket is always in comedies where they need a drill sergeant.
Yeah, Arlie Ermey.
Yeah.
That's actually, we talked about that when we did the Frighteners episode too, because in Frighteners, Arlie Ermey plays the ghost of that character, essentially, Gunnery Sergeant Hartman.
Yeah.
And he's doing the same thing, but now he's doing it in a cemetery and yelling at ghosts, which is really funny.
Robert Duvall is my favorite character in this whole thing.
Yes, Colonel Bill Kilgore.
Yeah.
I was thinking that when he was on the screen, like, the height of the horrors of Vietnam might be the only context that can handle Robert Duvall's acting.
Yeah.
It was actually in the right place there.
Yeah. He's so good. And that's one of my favorite sequences in this movie. One of the most iconic, because first you get that the chopper like laying down fire so that they can take the beach, while Wagner's Flight of the Valkyries is blaring from the helicopter's PA systems. And then, of course, you've got the I Love the Smell of Napalm in the Morning, that iconic speech.
Yeah, I feel like when that's quoted, people always shout it, but it's part of a fairly calm monologue he's given.
Yeah. And he's down, just like crouched, just talking about it too. Like, he's very calm. And that's his whole demeanor through the entire film. Like, even in the middle of a war zone, he's very laid back. He's very calm. Like mortar shells land behind him, and he's talking to these guys about the waves and how bad they want to go surfing.
Doesn't miss a beat either.
Yeah, he's so good. I think Duvall has done his best work with Francis Ford Coppola, because obviously in this, and then I love him in The Godfather, Tom Hagen. That's probably my favorite character in those movies. Yeah.
Love everybody in The Godfather.
Yeah, everyone's solid.
Yeah,
and then of course you have that great line later when Martin Sheen is just infuriated it's not Martin Sheen, but it's like one of Robert Duvall's like privates or something. They're like, should we really go in there? It's really hairy. Charlie's all over there. His response is just, Charlie, don't surf. And that's one of my favorite moments in this movie too.
Yeah,
they got some comedy out of that.
Yeah, definitely.
That part of the movie, that character. Like what you were talking about before, how calm he is. Like, he's sitting there talking to these guys, and a shell would hit behind him, and the other guy jumps, and he just doesn't flinch at all.
Yeah, doesn't miss a beat. And all the while, he's sitting there doing, like, this Wild Bill, like, yellow scarf and, like, a Civil War era hat the whole time, too.
Yeah, he looks more like a gentleman on safari with the scarf.
He looks like a G.I. Joe character. Yeah. He looks like he should be in the G.I. Joe cartoon. Like, in fact, there actually is, I remember owning the G.I. Joe action figure when I was a kid for a character called Wild Bill.
Yeah.
And it all, like, with the exception of military fatigues being swapped out for, like, a Union Blue style suit, it very much looks like Robert Duvall in this movie. And I always thought that was kind of interesting. There's some really great minor, like, small roles in this movie. Harrison Ford in the very beginning.
I thought that might have been him. I thought I was wrong.
Nope, Harrison Ford. This would have been fresh off of Star Wars, too. Because they shot this, it was like between 77 and 78, and it took them a couple of years before it actually got released in 79.
Yeah, you started to mention before, is this the one that I've heard that, like, they filmed a lot of it in Vietnam?
In that region, like around Cambodia, the Philippines, I think, is where they shot a lot of it.
And it was like, was it like kind of method? Like, he had him actually in the jungle, and like the actors.
Yes, Martin Sheen actually had a heart attack during the filming of this.
Wow.
And Coppola lied to the films backwards about it because he knew they would have shut down the production. And like, it was already delayed. Like, it's notorious for like all these issues.
Stress-related heart attack.
Yeah, stress-related. Like, there was issues, like, Brando showed up overweight, like, and just completely Brando and just a pain in the ass to work with, which is part of like why he's almost always shot in shadow, why he's wearing black the entire movie. And like,
yeah,
you don't really
shoot his face a lot.
Yeah, it's almost all like, and even then, I think there's maybe twice in the entire movie where you actually see his full face. The rest of it, like, it's obscured by shadows when he's reading poetry and shit.
Yeah.
Is there any actor good enough now that they could show up overweight and not just get replaced?
Oh,
like,
man.
For a part like that?
I don't think we have a modern Marlon Brando type actor.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, there's definitely actors who are probably as difficult to work with.
Are you overlooking Johnny Depp?
I wouldn't
know what he's a pirate. He's a Native American.
ten years ago, I would have said De Niro, but I mean now, like, I feel like the last 14 years has just been.
I think De Niro's the last guy that could carry any kind of weight like that.
Yeah, definitely. And the last great thing, the last really great thing De Niro did, I feel like, was Ronin. Which was this really kind of like small scale like spy / action-ish, but not really, like, more thriller.
Apparently you missed Analyze That.
Analyze That was actually before Ronin.
Oh, okay.
But I actually liked Analyze That. I own Analyze That.
That's the most recent one I could think of. Yeah, I fucked my...
missed the obvious Meet the Parents or Little Fuckers.
I thought Analyze That was newer, but... Anyways.
No. Analyze That is the sequel. Analyze This is the first one, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Analyze This is pretty good. Analyze That, I don't own that one, so whatever.
All right. My joke stands.
That reminds me, though. Did Brando come back for Apocalypse Later?
I feel like Coppola started. Probably wouldn't have had him back. One of the other reasons I love this movie so much, too, is because it's literally just Heart of Darkness set in Vietnam. And Heart of Darkness is this really great short story by Joseph Conrad, basically about this guy who's sent up the river to capture, or like to find like this ivory trader named Kurtz. And like a lot of the, it gets all into like this kind of human nature, like this really dark stuff. Like when they get attacked on the river, and a very young Lawrence Fishburne's character, the gunner, the kid, gets killed. Like that scene happens in Heart of Darkness, where like they start getting pilled up with spears, like, and they can't find out who's attacking them.
Was this screenplay officially based on that?
Not officially, but he's been Coppola was very transparent in that it was a very obvious influence. There was a film before this that Werner Herzog did called Aguirre, The Wrath of God. Which is also a very similar thing, except it's about like German explorers traveling through the Amazon, and it's the same kind of thing where like they're traveling a river and just they find out a lot of dark shit about themselves along the way, basically.
They did a good job in this of making it so ominous when they get to that destination.
Yeah,
and it's like it's just as fucked up and crazy as you could possibly have imagined that it would have been.
Yeah.
Well, the thing, like, because the whole movie, there's so much action, and then they come into that last leg, and the people are just literally standing there in the boats, doing nothing, and that's more jarring than any of the violent shit that happened before it.
And that, well, and then like Brando, like just sitting there, like reading like poetry and shit, like and. Just saying all these, like, very creepy things.
Yeah, because you're also like, what the fuck did he do that these people are that many people are scared of him that he's just established dominance?
Yeah, and even Dennis Hopper, another one of those great, very great, but small role as that photojournalist who is completely devoted to Kurtz. Like, for seemingly no real reason other than maybe he's just batshit insane and doesn't know any better.
He acted as though he were on acid. Like,
yeah.
I was wondering for a minute if Brando had been drugging these people.
like in the movie or in real life?
Either or. But
that's it. Hopper, you probably wouldn't have had to have drugged Hopper very much.
And I feel like if this were cast now or like a time travel recast, I would put Robert Downey Jr. in that part.
As Kurtz?
As the photographer.
Oh, yeah. Like a... I'm thinking of now of his character from Natural Born Killers, the television reporter.
Yeah.
But yeah, actually, Downey would be really good in that.
There was that great moment when he was walking him up the steps, and he's like, "You guys are looking at the heads." He gets carried away sometimes.
Yeah, he's
so apologetic. The stereotypical abused spouse or something.
Yeah, all he does is man, and he's a good man.
Yeah. He only does this when people are worshiping him.
Yeah. Oh, man. Some of the shit that Dennis Hopper says, like, part of me wonders how much of that was him just, like, being on acid and riffing. Because, like, I feel like he probably was to it. Like, at one point he's like, "I'm not even a man. Like, I should have been a thing with my claws scuttling on the bottom of the sea." I was like, what the fuck does that mean? Like, that's such, like, crazy, like, drug-induced, like, stepping outside of yourself talk that, like, I can't make any sense of it whatsoever.
I thought this was really well written, especially when we got to that climax. I started to realize it was really sparsely written up to that point. And then when you get to the temple or whatever the hell that is, then the things that Dennis Hopper's character is saying and Kurtz is saying is, like... Then they, like, unleash on you.
Yeah, with the exception of, well, I guess the narration and Robert Duvall, there's not much, it's not, like, conversation-heavy, dialogue-heavy.
No.
For the most part.
Yeah, a lot of it's just, like, a lot of it's just visual.
Yeah.
Like, them drifting down a river, and just, like, the bridge burning, like, when they're crawling through, and they, like, you can't find the CO at the one station. Yeah. This movie does that really well.
They also do a really good job of, because of back on the naked kung fu scene, like, they open up with him, like, with Sheen being insane.
Yes.
Like, being nutty, and then they bring him to go, "We need you to go kill a crazy guy."
Yeah.
And then he meets Duval, and you're like, this guy is crazy. Why isn't he having to kill him? How crazy is the next guy?
Yeah.
And they just keep amping up the crazy characters that he's... And then the one, the middle stop, I guess, like, the commander's not even there. Everybody's just going nuts, shooting everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, no one knows who's in charge. What? But I do, I like the line the guy in the trench gives him when he's like, do you know who's in charge here? And he just says, yeah, and walks away.
Yeah. Just leaves him there. I like the
was it me or does that imply that the devil's in charge here? Like,
no, I think that's a pretty good inference from that scene. I also love too, going back to that opening with Sheen, like he's going crazy because he's not in the middle of the jungle fighting.
Yeah.
Like that, like he
right.
He even
gets
says
more
like
more normal when he gets
yeah. Like, he said, like, one of the things he says, like, I hadn't said a word to my wife until I said yes to a divorce, like, after he was gone. Like, that, like, he's come from Ohio, Toledo, which probably explains a lot. And then, like, he finds purpose, or at least, like, a reason in the war for existing, I guess. And then when he's out of that, like, he can't function. And I feel like that was true with a lot of people who came home from that war, too. It's like,
oh, yeah.
They couldn't, like, reintegrate into society because
right.
All they'd known was, like...
The homeless dudes.
Yeah, exactly. Like, all they'd known was killing and bloodshed for years.
Yeah, it really is insane to send people to do that and then expect them to just go at the factory and push a button for hours in a row.
I was going to say about that, right from the opening... Usually, in my opinion, narration is a big mistake in most movies. This is one where it seemed like it was very effective. It felt like the first-person monologue in a novel or something.
Yeah, it definitely worked here. We actually, the last one I recorded, I just did American Psycho with Sue Monk-Tergalker, another comic, and we were actually talking about the narration in that, too. And yeah, this is definitely one of those ones where it really works. Cause, like, clearly, like, Willard, Martin Sheen's character, like, is supposed to be, like, our main... point of identifying like our viewpoint through the movie, but then like a lot of the times nowadays especially it feels like it's just thrown in there to kind of explain away things that they don't get enough to like show us without having such a forced like explanation.
It's usually a crutch for bad writing.
They just put a lot of the bad exposition and everything in it, but this had a nice like sort of poetic flow and
it does.
And Martin Sheen's voice.
Oh, Martin Sheen is so good. This is my favorite thing that he's ever been in. He's so fucking good in this movie.
He's incredible in it.
Yeah. This really came down to two great voices against each other.
Yeah, it really does.
And I think it also does something where they bring him in and they play him the recording of Brando just saying batshit insane things. And then it's... I feel like it's just a little... contrast between him and Sheen's voiceover, because it's just it's both sort of the disembodied voice.
And it's immediately after we've heard him saying all this stuff about like he had to get back to the jungle. It's like, shit, I'm still only in Saigon, not in back there in the war. And then Brando,
I'm sorry, that's
go ahead,
that's again like from Martin Sheen's crazy rant, and then for him to look or hear Brando talking crazy and go, what the fuck?
Yeah.
That was also really effective to set him up as a presence from the beginning of the movie. And then it's, what, probably 2+ hours in before you actually see him.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's like it
he comes in for like the last half hour-ish or so of the film.
Yeah.
And, he's the entire mission.
Yeah.
And he's looking at the files throughout, too, so it kind of...
Yeah.
Like, he's a presence the entire time.
Yeah, it's... I wanted to comment on what you said earlier about the recording. That, the line about the snail crawling along the straight razor.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite lines, like, that's ever been written into a movie
ever. It does. Because
it's such a good line.
You immediately picture it, and I feel like I keep talking over you, that's why.
No, you're fine.
You immediately picture it, and you're like, wait, that would cut it, what?
Yeah, exactly! Oh god, that's such a good fucking line. Like the script, like those moments, like I feel like they're spread out and they're sprinkled pretty well throughout the film, but like when those those big moments come up, like you kind of snap to attention, like what? like it grabs your attention, like you were saying with the slithering along the razor thing.
Yeah. And still with the theme of amping it up from... Like, because Martin Sheen's not very innocent.
No, definitely not.
In this movie either. Like, it's a bad dude going after a worse dude.
Yeah, yeah. It's heavily implied that he was, like, he's performed black op assassinations when Harrison Ford and the other guy bring him in at the beginning.
But, yeah, and he shoots the girl in the boat.
Yeah, and, yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, because I haven't also just seen it for the first time. When it got to the end there, were you wanting him to kill Kurtz?
Yeah.
Okay, so was I.
Yeah, I think, yeah, like, that was the only way that movie ends.
Right.
Like, I feel like there's, like, I don't think there was any way they could have written it where he goes in, makes sense of what Kurtz is saying, and then is like, nah, I'll just tell the guys, like, the brass I couldn't find him or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, no, this dude has to fucking die.
Yeah.
And I don't, for me at least, that wasn't clear until he got there and there was decapitated heads laying around.
Yeah.
It was like clearly. I was not totally expecting that because they almost, from the picture they painted leading up to that, it almost seemed like maybe this guy was just rejecting what he was there for and like going off on his own.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh no, he's made himself a god.
Yeah, it's like, no, he's actually crazy and gone rogue and we need to put him down.
Was there. It felt like, too, there was an element of him kind of being like, yeah, if your cause is worth doing this for, then it's worth completely losing your humanity. I'm thinking of when he told the story about how they cut the arms off.
Yeah, and he was talking about how, like, if he had, like, men half as dedicated as, the Viet Cong, like, he could win any war he was put into. Yeah.
That really struck of, like, a religious fanatic who's like, okay, I totally buy the bullshit. And like,
yeah.
Then if you're going to do it, then you have to be inhuman.
Yeah, that was this whole thing. Like, I think the line is something along is like, violence isn't the enemy. Like, judgment is the enemy. Like, the fear of how you're going to be perceived if you follow through and have the conviction to, like, back up your beliefs.
Yeah.
That whole sequence is haunting.
That was a big criticism of the real world. Well, Vietnam was real world too, but
what's it?
There was a big criticism of the like the Iraq and Afghanistan wars is that they were just like they were avoiding certain buildings and not, you know, like, and there were a lot of people who felt like if you're gonna do it, do it.
Like, yeah, like very scorched earth policy.
Yeah, which is it's hard to say. Like, if that is, like, do you need people like that if you're gonna be going to war? Because ideally, you just don't go.
Yeah.
Like, ideally, we don't do it, but you need, like, crazy fucks if you're gonna do it.
Yeah. And that's been a point of debate with this movie, too, is, like, nobody can really make a case for whether it's pro-war or anti-war. And I don't think it's trying to be either of those, either. Like, I think it's literally just saying, it's like, hey, this is what this kind of thing does to people.
Right.
Like, these are the dark places of the human soul that we don't really want to go to.
Yeah, it does stay pretty neutral on what it's trying to tell. I mean, it tells you a lot.
Yeah,
but it's
definitely
neutral.
Well, it would be a much lesser movie if it was, like, just making an anti-war statement.
Exactly,
or
yeah.
Versa.
You watch something like Born on the 4th of July or, like, Platoon, and those very clearly, like, you're like, hey, maybe war is not so good. This, you're just like, God, what is wrong with people?
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of...
Yeah, it's the emphasis isn't even on war as much as it is, like, humanity and sanity and, yeah, the horror.
The horror. Oh, God, a great closing line, too. And that's the other thing with this movie, too, is, like, Vietnam is, it's just incidental that that's where it's set. Like, it almost doesn't matter that it's happening during the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of like a movie like Shaun of the Dead, where the movie's really about, you know, like, him as a person, like, him being in Arrested Development and him trying to salvage his relationship, and then it's just like, oh, zombies happen to be here. Like, it's not like, oh, shit, zombies. It's like, hey, this is the real story here, and this is the backdrop that we've put it against.
I think there's truth to that, but also I think that Vietnam does lend a really interesting context because...
Oh, absolutely it does.
Not just because, oh, it happens to be during wartime, but because the Vietnam War is what it is and so controversial and still people don't agree that we should have been there at all.
Yeah.
Compared to, like, World War II, where I think you'd be less likely to have a story like this where, while it's still war, people still go crazy. Like, there was a clear enemy.
Yeah.
And that a thing could happen to a guy like Kurtz to where he just goes off the rails. Mm-hmm. I think that factors into it.
Yeah, that is interesting, because when you look at, like, when you watch Inglourious Basterds, you're all for these dudes, and they're scalping people, and they're pretty horrible, but the people they're doing it to have a Nazi uniform to point at and go, no, they're more evil.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of that, like, but, that idea of good and evil and rationalizing the action.
Yeah.
Whereas this, it's like, I think one of my favorite, like, kind of more subtle moments in the movie is when Willard and Shep get off the boat to go look for mangoes, and then the tiger jumps out of the bushes at him, and they run.
I love that. Get
back on the boat, and they're like, never get off the boat, never get off the boat. Like, they repeat that in three or four different scenes throughout the movie. And that, to me, kind of, like, came across as this idea of just kind of staying out of where we don't belong. And I thought that was a really fitting metaphor for Vietnam in general. It's like, oh, hey, the jungle is not our turf. If we go in there, we don't fucking know what's in there. Like, we don't know what could happen. Oh, there's a tiger in here. We shouldn't be here. Yeah.
What's your guys' take on the symbolism? Probably being a little bit thick, and it's, like, easier than I think. But at the end there, when they're cutting back and forth between the people, like, sacrificing that calf.
The ox and then Kurtz being killed?
Yeah, it felt like we're... Did that have to do with, like, this is such a meaningless sacrifice for nothing? And that... I kind of was thinking about how, like, Kurtz was being sacrificed at the behest of the army.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that's a fair... Well, fair draw.
He'd already been sacrificed by the army.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
When he was sent there to begin with, I think. And then there's also something to be said for... It's an American soldier underneath it all who's getting killed at the same time.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, like cattle just...
Being sent to the slaughter, definitely. The difference is, they actually killed that fucking water buffalo in the movie.
Wow.
That, like, that scene, they were actually cutting into it. Jesus because they do not have, or at least at the time, they did not have, like, the stringent animal laws for shooting. So, yeah, they actually killed a fucking water buffalo shooting that scene. So that's why it looks not exactly fake.
Did they use it for meat, at least?
I hope so. I didn't read beyond that, but I was like, Jesus Christ, I hope that they got some use out of that.
I feel like I would be okay with it, yeah, if they all had buffalo burgers later.
Yeah, but they're just like, oh, alright, we killed this to be in our movie. I'll just throw it out in the garbage.
I think it's fair as long as they actually killed Brando, too.
Yeah. I think Brando killed Brando by this point, and then it just took 30 years to catch up with him.
Oh, did you not see Don Juan DeMarco?
Oh, I saw Don Juan DeMarco. It was like a stages of death over the next 30 years.
This was only a year or two, a couple of years before he was in Superman then.
Yes, yeah.
Was his hair dyed gray, or did he age that quickly?
I think it would have had to have been dyed. Because
he looks real old in it, and he's a lot fatter than he is in that, too.
Yeah. No, Superman came out before this, I think, because the first Superman was 78.
79, I think.
Was it? Okay, then it was the same year. But this was shot, I think. Because it took a couple of years for this film to get finished and then released. Because it was going to be the first studio picture that really dealt with Vietnam. And then Deer Hunter beat it to the punch, just because this had so many troubles coming out. Deer Hunter was 78, and then this came out the following year.
Oh, the Deer Hunter.
Great movie. Way too goddamn long.
It does
not handle its pacing as well.
I've tried to watch it four times, and I stopped during the wedding scene.
Yeah, it's rough. That first hour is rough. And I say that as a person who likes that movie. But, yeah, it definitely, you have to be in the right mindset, and you have to be willing to sit through an hour wedding scene in Cleveland, Ohio.
It's even worse than this guy being from Toledo.
Cool. I think that about puts us in time. Do you guys have anything else you want to say before we wrap it up?
I was going to say, it really... kind of, it was a stylistic choice, but it really stands out how many fades from one shot to another.
Yeah, those cross dissolves.
Yeah,
those are really good.
It felt a little too much, but probably just because, like, if someone did it now, it would be ridiculous.
Yeah, bug you.
But at the time, it probably was perfect.
But yeah, well, and it gives it kind of that ethereal nature, too, I think.
Yeah.
Which, like, works really well on the ending. And then, of course, like I said, like that opening sequence with the end by the Doors, which is the only song by the Doors that I don't fucking hate. but yeah, and it's largely because of its involvement with this movie and that scene.
I wanted to say that about it, too. The music, not just at the beginning and the end, but throughout, the music was just, like, perfect for
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, it was all of the time, but it's, oddly enough, music maybe because of this movie that you still hear in movies.
Uh-huh.
So it doesn't even make it feel, like, out of place either. I guess it's also set in that era of classic rock, so...
Yeah.
It's... I'm trying to think what other like, songs there were. Because there was Suzy Q by Creedence that played during the USO show.
I feel like...
Satisfaction.
Yeah, Satisfaction on the Boat. That was the other one.
Yep, that was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like so much of it has been parodied and lifted from that.
Yeah.
It even watching it the first time, like, nothing in it is really unfamiliar.
Yeah.
I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. I think actually my first introduction to this was on an episode of The Critic, the animated show with John Lovitz playing a film critic, and they do a spoof called Apocalypse Wow, which is a musical version, and it's just somebody doing like a Brando impersonation, just singing as Colonel Kurtz and like shooting basketball with severed human heads like at his place. Like that was the first time I knew that Apocalypse Now was a thing, and then I think I saw Major Payne shortly after that, and I was kind of aware like the influences there.
The only thing I wish there had been some more something about how he got those people to worship him.
Yeah,
like what he offered them or what it was, because I have a hard time believing it's just fear.
I think that's what it was, because Martin Sheen makes that comment when he's reading the dossier earlier and finds out like the four people that Kurtz had assassinated, to the point where like enemy troops like pulled out of that region. Mm-hmm. So like I think that's what it boiled down to. He knew the right people. Basically, it was kind of like that first day of prison thing. It's like you find the biggest, baddest person. You take them out, and then you show them that basically there's always a bigger fish, to quote Qui-Gon Jinn, if I may.
Because the people in the jungle that are sort of his followers, I guess, at this point, weren't soldiers. They were
natives. No, they were all civilians. Right? Civilians and natives. I think it was a mix of both. They referred to, like, a Montagard army. I don't know what that means. But yeah, like they were not VC.
I don't think it was an accident that they name checked Charles Manson.
No, definitely not.
In the middle of the movie, kinda, he was reading the newspaper.
That cult mentality there, yeah, that too.
Yeah,
I think he probably there was just literal fear of him, but he also kind of had that like Joel Osteen quality about him.
Yeah. What even like when Hopper's going on like kind of like I mean he is. Like, he seems interesting, like,
yeah.
Like from a point, like, even, like, when we're watching this, at least for me, like, I watch, it's like, this guy's, like, a certified fucking nutbag, but, like, where's he coming from? Like, is he reading Yeats in there? Like, what's going on? Like, yeah, I'm very curious, and I'm intrigued by this person. And I think that's probably part of what it was, too, in addition to the fear, it was genuinely, like, them seeing something that they weren't familiar with, something they'd never encountered before.
Another thing that struck me was the towards the beginning or the first half, when they show them taking over the first little town.
Yeah,
with Duval's.
When they take the beach.
Yeah, and they have the boat that has shark teeth painted on it.
Yeah,
those between those and like the thing that the trucks they put all the people in to get them out.
Uh huh.
Like, it just seems so insane. Like, I couldn't imagine just being a person who lived in a jungle.
Yeah.
And these machines show up in the sky and, like, just these boats
lay
and these
waste
big
to you.
Things opening up and carrying people away.
Yeah.
Like, it's so nuts. And that's the technology that in the 70s. Like, now it's like drones and all these crazy tanks and shit like that.
People pulling over your food boat and then shooting you and taking your puppy.
That was the most intense moment for me.
Yeah.
As much intensity as there was in this movie when that guy just couldn't hold it any longer and pulled the trigger.
Oh, man, she just... Oh, no, 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 the kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, kid. Lawrence Fishburne. Yeah.
That was like... That literally was like a setup in my seat shock.
Yeah. No, so like, it really does. Like, it's unprovoked. Like, it's not like any of them goes... Like, it's literally like the lady steps towards the guy when he's going to check something.
Right.
And he just freaks out, like, and sprays.
Yep.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be a baby in the bucket.
I was trying to remember. Because there was part of me that was actually thinking, was like, I don't think she goes for a weapon, but it's been a couple years since I've seen this. But I remembered that Martin Sheen kills her, and then says, let's go. Like, I told you not to stop the boat. Like, cause he doesn't give a shit anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's rough. Like, and that's... I feel like that's a moment that's characteristic of, like, some of my favorite, like, stories or, like, movies that have been inspired by Vietnam is, like, where you have those moments that just make you, like, go, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think right after those guys leave, like, they just let them leave. So they kind of wanted to get rid of Brando, too.
Yeah, yeah.
The natives did. And then I imagine a plane flies by and they throw out a bottle of Coke.
Yeah. And teach the world to smile.
Yeah, and that The Gods Must Be Crazy is a sequel
picks up right
to
from here.
Apocalypse
Now. Actually, like, going to that comment, like, people being grateful, like, Sheen even says, like, there's two moments where he says, like, in the narration that Kurtz knows what he was going to do, like, before Willard had made a decision.
Yeah.
And then he even says, like, I think Kurtz wants me to kill him more than I want to kill him. Like, Kurtz seemed like he was kind of looking for a way out. Like, why else would he? Like, and he doesn't really put up a fight. Like, he doesn't resist. Like, he could very easily have put himself in a position to not get killed by a fucking assassin.
Yeah.
He allowed it.
Yeah. I felt like he even walked out to the doorway.
Like, to kind of give away his position.
Yeah, to let him know he was in there and he was unarmed. And because he puts his hands out to wave the big cat or whatever is there. Yeah, so I feel like he was even letting him know, like, this is the time. Yeah,
yeah.
I've done everything. And then he had all his manuscripts and
everything so he could go back to him. And he was even making a final recording, too.
Yeah.
That's one last thing I want to hit before we wrap up. In that last recording, I don't know if you guys caught it, he's saying something about how the brass is giving some of their soldiers grief because they wouldn't allow them to paint the word fuck on their bombers because that was obscene.
Yeah.
And that was so crazy to me. And this, like, no, we're cool with you napalming civilians, but you can't write a swear word on the side of your bomber.
Yeah. That, like, still comes up because I heard of, Louis C.K. had done a trip over, and but a lot of comics have done it, where they go over and they're supposed to do comedy in a war zone, and then they tell them what things they're not supposed to say.
It's like, these guys are getting shot at, like, on a daily basis, some of them even. Like, are you going to care, like, if I say fuck or cunt or whatever?
Yeah, so I feel like that's, like, it's still, I mean, all of it is still relevant, like, everything in the movie.
Well, I mean, the entire South Park movie is based around that, pretty much, that violence is okay, but swearing is bad.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Cool. All right, I think we're going to go ahead and wrap it up there. We're a little over time, but thank you, John and Chris, for being on the podcast with me.
Thanks.
Cool. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Join us next time when I take Lindsay Martin and David Gamble through the sci-fi action film Demolition Man with Sylvester Stallone and Wesley Snipes. Like the page on Facebook, subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a review, send out any questions or comments to howhaveyounotseenthispodcast@gmail.com as we count down to our first live show on April 22nd at Shadowbox Live with Ghostbusters. And we'll catch you next time.